wanted to win as much as the rest of us did. When we didn't win the games, it was tremendously disappointing. But he would sustain you. He realized that there was a good group of people working with him, and we'd go back to work. And sure, he shared your disappointment. He shared your hurt. But he also wasn't one who was going to lash out and start to place blame right away.
I believe every lie that I ever told.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford on ESPN 850 WKNR.
Yeah, that is Hall of Fame head coach Marv Levy, formerly of the Buffalo Bills, talking about Ralph Wilson, the Hall of Fame owner of the Bills. And, you know, the human qualities that the guy has can't be overlooked. We think of owners as the suits, the billionaire businessmen. We tend to, I think our perspective on them tends to be less than human. It's like, well, they're the rich guys, and they lead a whole different kind of life, and they do. And they don't relate to others who say don't travel in those circles. But nothing could be further from the truth with Ralph Wilson, a guy who, for all that he had, I mean, when he'd show up in Buffalo from Detroit, he'd fly in. There'd be a little a modest rental car, like a Ford Taurus or something, waiting
well, of course.
Or a little Buick or whatever it might be, because he was, he'd get off the plane, get in the car, and that's what he was doing. And it was no limos, it wasn't going to be all that lifestyle. And I'll say this, and I got to share this one point with him about him, as I'll never forget this. So in 2007, I was diagnosed with cancer, and he heard about it through some channels within the team. I had a very small circle of people who within the Bills who knew Marv Levy, a few others. All of a sudden, I'd left the Buffalo News by then. I was working for NFL.com. I'm getting a call from Ralph Wilson saying, and wanted to talk to me. Well, he called me, Michael, weekly to check in on a weekly basis for about a month. Because God bless everything. I'm
absolutely
knocking on wood that,
sure,
that it all was going well.
Yeah.
And I was doing, really well at the time. So it was a fight, but, going through chemo, all that. But he's checking in, and he's saying, hey, how you doing? And I said, that told me about the man. Because I wasn't even covering his team. He had nothing to gain other than just being a true friend.
And when you were writing the bills for the book, you went round and round a little bit.
Michael, he agreed with everything you wrote, right?
About his football team?
I pissed him off on multiple occasions with things I wrote for the Buffalo
News.
That's
the beauty of your relationship,
but
he respected you.
We came back. We would agree to disagree sometimes.
Exactly.
So, you really love those kinds of things. All right. We know we told you to weigh in with some calls in 216-578-0850. Always want to hear from you. And it turns out that Kevin in Olmsted Falls has got a Ralph Wilson story. Hi, Kevin.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good, man.
Good. Hey, I just wanted to comment on Ralph Wilson. I was at the Hall of Fame induction ceremonies back in 2009 when he was inducted. And when he got up and spoke, I literally felt like it was my own grandfather up there telling me a story about the AFL. Mm-hmm. And I firmly believe without him, the AFL would never have made it. I remember him telling the story about the Kansas City Chiefs, how they were financially in trouble. He gave them some of his own money to help keep that franchise afloat. So without Ralph Wilson, the NFL is definitely not where it is here today.
Yeah, Kevin, that's a great point, and thank you for that memory. He actually gave Al Davis, I want to say $400,000 was the amount, something or other, to keep the Raiders afloat. Mm-hmm. So he was that kind of a guy. Ralph Wilson did that from his own, wrote the check, and in the early days of the American Football League, wanted to make sure that the American Football League, during their bargaining with NBC for their rights, got as maximum amount of money. He said, this is crucial if we're going to compete with the NFL. And ultimately they did, so that they could sign a player like Joe Namath and force that merger.
That's right. Did you ever get to go to an old AFL game at War Memorial when you were a kid?
I didn't.
You and I were little kids.
I got to a Bills game as a kid, but not AFL.
Right, but seeing that, Jack Kemp, Senator Kemp.
Another great friend. Congressman Kemp.
Congressman Kemp. Leading Ralph Wilson's AFL Bills, right? And those snowy and dark days at Old War Memorial.
Sure.
Remember watching it on TV as a little kid. And the impression it made upon me is this is a tremendous football city.
In the days, and again, you can keep making Cleveland connections here.
Yeah.
In those days, when the Bills, either before the Bills or when they were an AAFL team, you know, prior to the American Football League, a lot of Buffalo people who wanted to see pro football were Cleveland Browns fans.
Of course.
The Western New York area, Rochester, New York.
Yeah.
They're still
on into Erie when you cross into PA.
Yes,
yeah.
Tons of fans in that region who are Browns fans. And I found, you know, once I came to work for this team, I'd hear that. They say, oh, my dad took me to my first pro football game in Cleveland.
In Cleveland,
you know,
so.
And these were neighbors of mine.
Real quick, I want to get from you before we let the passing of Ralph Wilson go. How did he feel? Did you feel that he was going to ultimately, if not move to Toronto, want to play more in Toronto? How did he do with that?
The way he saw it was, and it was a big conflict with him. The way he saw it was, look, the team needed some level infusion of income that could keep it viable in, in the Western New York region, and that's where the amount of money that they were able to pull from those games in Toronto came into play. But that's how he saw it. I don't think he ultimately saw a move there.
Okay.
He did see it as somewhat of a shared resource, but mostly a West, just because of the realities of doing business in a small town, no Fortune 500 companies, don't have the big stadium, so I think those were the
Canadian
factors.
Bills fan base, what? Just
it's big. No, Southern Ontario,
20%?
Huge. It's that could
20%
could be 18 to 20%.
Good.
Yeah,
okay.
15
nice.
To 20%.
Nice.
Billy in Northridge wants to join us now. Hello, Billy.
Hey, good morning. Good afternoon, guys.
Hey, Bill.
Michael, it's good to hear your voice again. We miss you on the air.
I appreciate it, Bill. But college basketball has kept me rolling the last 3 months.
That's good. That's good to hear your voice. It brings back a lot of good memories.
I appreciate it. Thanks.
I was going to say, you know, it's a sad day, like you mentioned, with Ralph Wilson, but also it's a very sad day when you see what Jim Kelly's going to go through now. And I just read today in the paper that, Thurman Thomas, Bruce Smith, and Andre Reed have been visiting him often at the hospital. So I hope things work out for Jim. He's an all-pro on the field and off the field, and I just wanted to say that over the air.
Thank you for that, Billy. And those sentiments mean a lot to me, too, and I've been very close touch with the whole Kelly clan and just trying to monitor things. We'll see what I think his surgery. He was supposed to have surgery in New York tomorrow. I think it's been postponed till next week. A lot that goes into what he's facing, and you're just keeping
it's very complicated, is it not, Vic?
Yeah, from what I understand,
right,
and just keep your. I won't go into any of the medical part of it, but just keep your prayers. Horn in Akron is with us now. Hello, Horn.
Hey, fellas, how y'all doing?
All right,
good, Horn.
We talk about the draft there for real quick.
Yeah.
None of the quarterbacks are worth taking. I mean, we can't wait to the third round, even the fourth round, to get a quarterback to be worked with for the future. And that's all these teams, they all throwing that smoke screen about these guys. Ain't none of them worth a nickel. None of them. Anyhow, at the fourth pick, we take the best player out there on the board, which whether it be whoever it be. But we need a linebacker because linebacker's going to be old in the next couple of years. We need a linebacker. Whoever they would take, if they can take a receiver in the second pick, or move up to take whoever they want as a receiver, and go on from there. Now, as far as the rules go and changing the football, I wonder what this 5 feet is going to do for a long field goal that's going to be kicked. Because I don't know how much of a difference that 5 feet up there will make on these long field goals.
Extending the uprights, Horn's talking about.
It could be a factor, Horn. And thank you for the call. It'll be interesting to see how this all resolves itself, Michael, because the NFL, it was a Patriots proposal, Bill Belichick specifically, who wanted the extra point thing.
Because of the Sunday night game against the Baltimore,
right?
Right. Yeah.
And, he kept saying, again, this is too much an automatic play. The way the rules are set up, you can't even defend the play. And he said you make so many things illegal about trying to block the kicks and so on and so forth for safety reasons. So what I think is going to happen, and I'm not 100% sure, but I think they're talking about a couple of preseason games where they're going to attempt those extra points from a longer distance, I think, create a 38-yard or so field extra point that will be more like a shorter field goal.
Right. So possibly put the football anywhere from the snap 20, it from the 20 to the 25-yard line.
Yeah, that's what it sounds
to
like.
To create a 37 to 42-yard extra point.
That's what it sounds like. If it's at the 25, I guess that's what it would be,
42 yards.
Yeah. So I think that's what is at least going to be experimented with.
You like that?
No. I want to leave it alone.
Neither do I.
That one doesn't...
I haven't talked about this. I don't understand that.
It's just... I think I call this... This falls under the heading of unnecessary tinkering. Now, what I think is smart is getting a centralized location involved for replay. And that, to me, is a stroke of genius, finally. And it's... copying the National Hockey League, which has been doing that, where all replay reviews
out of
and
New
calls
York City,
are
well,
actually made in Toronto for
that's
for
right,
hockey.
Hockey's Toronto,
but
it, yeah.
but in the
NFL
offices, it would be New York.
Park Avenue, right?
You know, Park Avenue, and they would have right at the central control all those monitors. It's a space-aged room. I mean, they can see every angle of every play. They've got the high def, so they can start looking at plays. This will be the key. There'll still be the hooded thing, which I really don't like, and I think it's an antiquated concept, going under the hood and making a call there.
Yeah.
But before the official ever sticks his head under the hood and puts those headsets on, like we have on now, the folks in New York will have already started the review process, and they'll probably come to a conclusion regardless of what the ref says.
And you're still, though, going to go back. The white hat, the referee and a game referee in charge will still then – the way I understand it, make the ultimate decision.
Yeah, as long as he agrees with New York.
let me throw this out there. How about this, though? See, I've got a problem with the variance in the amount of cameras that are used on how games are designated. Like, say, you've got Baltimore playing New England, all right? And that's the feature game of the day. So that would be CBS with the AFC side. You're going to have 14 to 16 cameras dedicated to that. Now, what if the Browns on that during that same time, or anybody else during that same time, the Browns are playing Jacksonville, say, and there's only six cameras covering that game seven. So here's my thing. Why not put more cameras, have multiple cameras assigned to goal line, sidelines, back line? That you can get
that'll be
a
constant, more,
a constant for
fixed.
Every game, whether it's 5, 6, 8, but again, goal line, sidelines, back line of the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I think we get so many plays that come under scrutiny, and a lot of them, as we know, don't wind up being reviewable,
right?
Given what time of game they may be. So that's something I'd look at.
I think so too. Me too. I'm all for that's been discussed. I don't think they're going there yet still, but it is something that I think the term I heard today was tabled, so it'll be there for
tabled?
Future discussion.
Okay.
All right, Scott Petrak, Elyria Chronicle Telegram, covers the Browns. We'll get more discussion from him on what took place at the NFL owners' meetings. He was not down there in Orlando, but certainly monitoring it as we are, and get his perspective on things. Again, want to hear from you, 216-578-0850, or tweet us at Browns_daily. Want those barks and growls from the pound. Vic Carucci with Michael Regei filling in for Nathan Zagura on Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford.